Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit SurreyFarms.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
This is How to Behave on the Heritage Radio Network. This day in behavior history, on June 24th, 1978, a group of 17 students stormed the administration building at the University of California at Berkeley and refused to leave until their demands were met. Those demands were simple: that all food must be eaten within 100 miles of where it was grown, that all food must be recognized as food by your grandmother, that any dish with more than 5 ingredients be taxed at 30%, that the proceeds from that tax be used to start farms at elementary schools, and that all school cafeteria lunches be made 100% from food grown on school grounds. By July 9th, the protest in Berkeley had grown to include over 250 people. Similar protests spontaneously started up all across the country, at places as diverse as the University of Kentucky, the University of California at Davis, Ohio State University, and Sarah Lawrence. By July 11th, the press was widely referring to this protest as the Foodie Movement, and to the protesters as foodies. They were socialists, leftists, commies, pinkos, intellectuals, vegetarians, vegans, and hippie nuns. Their leader's name was Michael Pollan. On July 14, 1978, Governor Ronald Reagan ordered the California National Guard to storm the administration building. 129 foodies were killed, 74 were injured, and the entire city of Berkeley was burned to the ground. Today's show is in honor of those foodie martyrs who fought and died so that I could pay $27 a pound for locally foraged ramp pesto at my neighborhood green market, and then make fun of anyone who doesn't know what locally foraged ramp pesto is. I'm Brian Kaiser, and this is How to Behave, the Food Asshole Show. To my right, as always, food blogger, food writer, and card-carrying foodie, Hannah Howard.
I prefer the term food asshole. Thank you very
much. Do you? I think that that's going to catch on, and people who don't like to be called foodies are going to be called food assholes.
I think it's only a matter of time.
Yeah, and I think the time is now, and we're going to talk about why today. Every week we deal with a different aspect of behavior. This week, food assholes. We are thrilled to have with us Michael Floriak. He's a brand strategist, a food writer, a student in the gastronomy program at Boston University, and the author of The Food Asshole's Dilemma, a screed published last week on his blog, Floriak Eats. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you.
Am I pronouncing your name right?
Not entirely, but close enough.
How do you pronounce it?
I pronounce it Floriak, like there's no A in it.
Floriak.
Most people pronounce it like you do, so that's fine.
And you just have more or less given up on correcting people?
Exactly.
Well, thank you, Michael Floriak.
I complain about.
From Portland, Oregon, we also have with us David McIntyre. David studied food systems and food policy under Dr. Marion Nestle at the university. Sorry, at New York University. He's been a consultant for the nonprofit food and policy sector, managed culinary schools in Portland and Austin, served as co-chair of the Portland Food Policy Council. He is currently on the board of Zenger Farm, the Portland Kitchen, and the Culinary Trust. He also chairs the food policy section for the International Association of Culinary Professionals. I think I just read your future resume, Michael Floriak, the greatest food asshole resume I could imagine. Thank you for joining us, David McIntyre.
Thanks for that nice setup, Brian. I'm glad to be the food asshole of note.
Well, We had to get a real asshole as our guest to balance out Michael. The phone lines are open, so if you're listening to the live stream at heritageradionetwork.org and want to join the conversation, call us at 718-497-2128. And if you're listening to the podcast later, please don't call to talk about food assholes. You will insult the hosts of Cutting the Curd. So I think we're all food assholes today, Hannah.
Card-carrying members of the Food Asshole Society.
So Michael wrote this list of 15 rules that every foodie must learn. I don't want to take time to read all 15 of them. at once, but a couple of my favorites are number 5, if you don't eat meat, let everyone know about it all the time. And number 14, cooking for others isn't a way of showing love, but expressing dominance. Hannah, what are a couple of your favorites?
I like to eat what your grandmother ate, but only those things that take so long to prepare that she gave up making them long ago. And I like if you aren't willing to invest in a set of tweezers, a cold smoker, and a sous vide machine, just eat a Hot Pocket, for Christ's sakes.
I love that. So, Michael, tell us why you wrote this list.
You know, it's kind of fun. Well, I think partially because I'm a curmudgeon and things like this kind of go through my head all the time. And I'd actually written it a long time ago. A long time ago, meaning maybe a year ago. And it just kind of sat on my computer for a long time. And I found it about 2 weeks ago and decided to post it up on the blog. And kind of a lot of people seemed to share this belief. So it was really actually, I mean, honestly, just... I was kind of thinking one day about a few of these things, and the list just started growing. And sometimes when I blog, I do it in kind of list form. So this was just sort of the 15 rants du jour, which I wrapped up under this title.
And it was sort of like in the style of Michael Pollan's Food Rules or...
Yeah, I mean, it didn't... You know, I have to give Michael Pollan a little prop here that I actually, you know, it ended up in his rule style, not so much because I'm looking to make fun of Michael Pollan, but I think he gets a lot of things very succinctly wrapped up in his rules and lists. So I was hoping to do the same thing, maybe just from, you know, sort of the other side of the mirror from where he's writing his rules and his lists. So hoping to cram a lot into a short list here.
Cool. So you're getting a master's degree in gastronomy, is that right?
I am, yep.
And so obviously you don't hate food. You don't hate eating good food.
Right. And I don't even hate people who like eating good food.
So you're obviously making fun of foodies here, but is it fair to say good-heartedly or tongue-in-cheek?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I've said this to a few other people. I did take the photo that was on the that accompanied the blog post here that had, you know, some pan-seared scallops and microgreens on it, and applied an Instagram filter to it. So I'm guilty of about 90% of the things that are on this list, as much as anyone else is.
Yeah.
So it is very much sort of good natured.
Under that photograph, you say, "But I didn't use tweezers to place the microgreens. For that, I am ashamed." I like that.
So wait, Michael, I have to know, did you use the Instagram filter ironically when you took that photo?
Oh, no. It was 100% to enhance the beauty of the microgreens. Call attention to the nice caramelization on the scallops.
Earnestly filtered microgreens. That's
Absolutely.
Great. So your introduction says these are rules that foodies must learn. Is the term foodie synonymous with food asshole, or
can we divide
the world into good and bad?
And I'll sort of refer back to that curmudgeon comment from earlier. There's something about that word that has sort of made the hair stand up on the back of my neck from the first time I encountered it.
And when was that? Yeah.
You know, I sort of take it back to the early 90s for me and a person I met who both sort of embodied the worst of food assholism and foodieism. So I think it goes back about that far, about 20 years. But, you know, I mean, certainly in the past 5 or 10, it's been a word that gets thrown around a lot. And particularly, you know, when I started doing this master's degree in gastronomy, and I cook a lot, and people know I cook a lot, and I'd get the question, so you must be a real foodie. But there is just something about that word. I kind of liken it to words like yummy. That just I don't like to hear those words coming out of adult mouths.
See, I heard you say that before, and I actually I buy wine as part of what I do for a living, and so I'm at wine tastings constantly. And the note that I write that is like the highest praise for a wine is yummy.
Is yummy?
If I write a 30-word description of the wine, it's probably good but not great. And if I just write yummy, that means I should buy it and put it in my restaurant because it's so good that...
If you just knock the me off the end of it, then you're in good shape.
So
make it a verb, and you're in good shape.
So it's really a matter of style.
Yeah.
But what is it really that's offensive about the word foodie? Because I know a lot of people who, like you, get called foodie and sort of cringe at the word. And I know a lot of people who aren't foodies but throw the word around at other people, sometimes as an insult. What?
I've never heard it as a compliment or in a context of anything positive. It seems to be only... I kind of think of it as like a hipster, the term hipster. Like, no one would self-identify as a hipster, but it's a great way to dismiss people. And same thing with foodie.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. And actually, you know, people who are more thoughtful about this than me have said kind of similar things. Around the time that I wrote this first food asshole piece about 2 years ago, the editor of Gastronomica, Dara Goldstein, who's a good card-carrying academic, was sort of writing about that same thing, that she sees people struggling with what to call themselves. And she made a point that I think is a good one about that, sort of why the foodie with the E on the end, you know, does kind of rankle some people. It's kind of like other words like commie and groupie and yuppie that are kind of easy to dismiss. There's something kind of mocking about them. And I think that's part of, you know, on the serious side, I think that's part of why that particular term gets to me a little bit. It is, you know, as you said, it's a little mocking, and it's maybe not so bad for someone else to call you that good-naturedly, but I think when you self-identify that way,
self-identify that way? Do you know anyone? Does anyone, any of us, know people who earnestly call themselves foodie?
David, you're from Portland. Why don't you answer that question?
Yeah, I mean, the answer is yes, and maybe not. I mean, you know, Portland is pretty self-aware, so probably not in Portland, but I think in the middle of the country, absolutely. And you know, Hannah, this idea of sort of hipster, I mean, I think there's some obvious parallels there. But
absolutely.
What changes is the criticism of a hipster doesn't make you a hipster, whereas when you start looking at the criticism of a foodie, it actually sort of turns you into the things that make that food, right? I mean, they're not doing it right.
When you say when you call someone a foodie, you're being a foodie?
Yeah, I mean, you're starting to then assess them and criticize them for specific things, right? That they don't do food the way you do food. They don't do it the right way. And actually, that's an interesting point of, like, when I look at what people criticize foodies for, it changes constantly. It's either that they're too into food, or they're not into food enough, or they spend too much on their food, or they don't spend enough on their food. Or, like, the criticisms sort of are all over the board. And for me, it starts to look like, you know, we just don't like the way they do food. Because if it were just, it's a jerk who likes food, that would make sense. But I don't think that's always the criticism.
Well, I think that's kind of why Michael has really hit on something, because food asshole actually is more clear. And it describes the jerk who likes food, not the person who has learned a lot about food and cares about what goes into their body and is careful about what they eat.
Right, and there's so many different incarnations of the foodie that it becomes kind of like this collage of overlapping but really different, whereas food, but they could all fit into that food asshole category much more neatly.
Yeah, along the lines of what you were just talking about, David, as I was researching this show, I came across an article from The Atlantic from a few years ago by a guy who was being hypercritical of anyone who fit the description of foodies. And he was a vegan, and so he was really, really judgmental of people who called themselves foodies but ate meat. And then Robert Setsuma from The Village Voice responded with an article about how this guy hates food and hates anybody who enjoys food. And a lot of the criticism, a lot of making fun of foodies includes vegans as foodies, like including your list, Michael.
Sure.
If you don't eat meat, be very, very vocal. So we don't even know whether vegetarians and vegans are included as foodies or excluded from being foodies because they are vegetarians.
I think one of the reasons why, you know, kind of this, I think it's disconnected with people, and why, you know, if I'd written it in some other form other than the rules, if I'd just sort of written three you know, three paragraphs or 700 words about this. I doubt that people would have read it. Is this idea that, you know, people who don't kind of fit whatever my rules are for what qualifies as a foodie is not a foodie. I think that is a big part of it. And sort of however, you know, you define that. Do you put people who have thought carefully about eating meat and they choose not to eat it? When you choose, you know, you've thought carefully about it and choose to eat it, you know, we could probably agree to disagree about that, or we could just be very vocal about why the other person is just completely not worth taking into account whatsoever.
I think it's more fun if we just call each other assholes and
never look at our own
behavior.
There's no fun in all getting along, but...
All right, well, we're going to have to take a short break, but when we come back, how many foodies does it take to put in a light bulb? This is How to Behave at heritageradionetwork.org.
The song's called Cheese Gainsburg by Taxstar on the heritageradionetwork.org. Keep it locked for more How to Behave.
Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit www.surifarms.com.
This is How to Behave. We are speaking today with Michael Florek, author of The Food Asshole's Dilemma, David McIntyre, a food asshole from Portland, Oregon, which is, I believe, redundant. I'm Brian Kaiser, here with Hannah Howard. I think, Michael, one of the things that I got out of your list and the responses to it, and as you've mentioned to me, a lot of people get it that it's a joke and some people don't get it, is that this list is a great test to see if you're a food asshole. Because if you read it and you recognize yourself in it and you get angry, then you're a food asshole. And if you read it and you recognize yourself in it and you laugh, then you're not an asshole. You're just a foodie. Does that seem fair?
I think that's an extremely enlightened way to look at it. So I'll remember that the next time somebody writes to me and doesn't get it, Brian.
If it's just seriousness, I mean, surely we all have some issue for which food is serious for us, whether it's you know, food equity or organics or GMOs or right. I mean, we all probably have something.
Right.
Beyond just flavor, where we're really passionate about. So is it just seriousness, or is it the sanctimonious?
Well, right. There's another way of looking at it, which is, you know, the guy that condescends to everybody in the room because they don't know as much about food as he does is probably right. He's obnoxious. He's no fun to have at the party, but he's probably not wrong about Monsanto and carbon footprints and localvorism and whatever else he's talking about, right?
Well, the worst of all is the vocal insistent, arrogant, and yet not so right. So the right is better. Well,
so David, talk to us about the good side of being a foodie, like the list that doesn't make you an asshole.
Well, I think if we look at the long picture, and I love that Michael sort of brought in sort of the origination for him of this term, and I distinctly remember a book my aunt gave me when I was young, and I had to look it up because I don't know where it is anymore. 1985 was the official foodie handbook.
Really?
Sort of the subtitle is "Be Modern, Worship Food." That's almost 30 years ago.
Wow!
Wow.
In some ways, this is just it's a movement that has shifted and moved and grown. And for me, a lot of the times when something gets so big, it splinters, right? I mean, mm-hmm. you get factions. And I think that's where we are now. But if we look at it in that long view, to me, the rise of organics, it's hard to make an argument that that's a bad thing. They've more or less tripled in the last 10 years, the sales of organics. The growth in organics over other foods is double the growth. That has all kinds of ramifications that ultimately is probably good for the farmers, the people who pick the food, the consumer, the climate, all the way down the line. You can do the same around local food consumption. It does a lot around local economies. And then the people wanting the specialized stuff does a lot for farmers. Those farmers can get a lot more money for that, for their ramps, although they don't get to grow that because that's wild theoretically. Mm-hmm. But they get a lot more money than they do for their commodity potatoes. And hopefully there's a little bit less consumption of processed foods, but all the data shows otherwise. So.
Yeah, and for health reasons, consuming real food from real farms that are closer than, you know, as close as possible is, you know, demonstrably good for your health.
That would be true, except, you know, like everything else, the artisanal and all that gets quickly greenwashed. And I did just hear a thing the other day that some of the fast food companies are moving towards imperfections in their manufactured foods to make it look a little more handmade.
Wow.
To actually look a little artisanal in that way. So your bun at McDonald's will be a little burnt on one side so that you think that it somehow went through a wood-fired oven, maybe? I don't know.
But so, like, if you compare six McDonald's buns, you'll see a pattern that there are only three different ways they burn, and it just keeps repeating. Like tracked houses, kind of.
Exactly.
But there was such an interesting article in The Atlantic recently about, I think we all agree about what Brian spoke about, you know, in general, eating these foodie foods, the farm foods, the less processed foods that don't come from Monsanto is like the way to go. But that in terms of affecting this giant population as a whole, especially the people that maybe live in the middle of the country and aren't having the foodie conversation, that these, you know, McDonald's maybe not making irregular buns, but like cutting back on their giant burger to be only 3/4 as giant can have this like really monumental effect. And that there's, you know, it's just the non-foodie people have giant power, clearly. So it's kind of interesting to see the play between the big evil corporations and the rest of and you know, whoever, we versus them, but maybe they can do something kind of cool.
Like when Walmart started bringing in organic foods.
Well, Walmart is the biggest source of organic foods in the country. So, right, exactly.
Right, then all these foodies were outraged that Walmart was taking away their thing, rather than looking at that like, okay, we've won. We can move on now.
Exactly.
That's the end
goal, maybe.
All those foodies that died as martyrs in Berkeley in 1978 did not do so in vain, because now Walmart has an organic section. Okay, guys, how many foodies does it take to screw in a light bulb? Hannah?
It takes one foodie to screw in a light bulb, but first they must hand forge the light bulb in its peak season. Age it to perfect ripeness, rub it with regionally specific herbs, and twist it into place on a bed of exquisite and locally sourced microgreens.
That were placed there with tweezers.
Of course. And then, of course, the whole thing must be Instagrammed with the proper filter.
If I ask you two guys, will you come up with an answer that's pretty close to that, or do you have different answers?
I have a different one.
Okay, Michael.
Mine is zero. Foodies don't change light bulbs. They just sit in the dark and bitch about it on Yelp.
I like that.
Excellent.
I have a slightly different one. Yeah. However many the most recent issue of Lucky Peach says it.
So is Lucky Peach a good thing, or is Lucky Peach an indication? Hannah pulls one out of her bag. An indication of how big of an asshole David Eggers has become.
Sorry, you know, I aimed that one squarely at you three. That's the fun part, right? Like, does that make you a foodie if you hang on David Chang's every tweezer?
Yeah.
Yes, I would say the answer is yes.
I haven't defended my position on foodies and food assholes yet, and I actually think that in a lot of cases, labels are good, not because they put people in boxes and they limit who we are and who we can be, but because they're shorthand. And in a conversation, it's a lot easier if somebody says to me, so you're a foodie? I can say yes, and we can just move on and talk about other things. Or I can spend 40 minutes explaining how I'm not a foodie and what the difference between me and a foodie is. But that's a waste of time because I love good food. I will travel far for things that I want to try. I will pay way too much money for it. I follow chefs. I read food literature. You know, you can call me whatever you want, but if your label is foodie, it doesn't hurt me to call me that. And to explain to everybody who asks all my food philosophies, that does hurt. And it hurts me and everybody around me. That's when I become a food asshole, when I say I'm not a foodie and explain why.
But Brian, I think this is only because you don't have a good alternative, right?
Because I don't have a better
thing
hobby.
That describes you better. So
I do actually, David. I call myself a gastronaut.
Wow. Okay, you win. But it's kind of like the Trekkie versus Trekker, and I can't remember which one is right.
Right.
But that group takes great offense at using the wrong one.
In the same way that some people prefer foodist to foodie, if that's a difference.
Right.
I guess someone who really loves food or someone who's into food is just too long to say, but I feel like few would object with that.
And to be honest, that's what I say when if anybody asks me if I'm a foodie, it's like, oh, I'm just kind of like a person with a mouth who likes to eat food, and expecting that they're going to nail whatever the preferred term that I have.
Because there's lots
I think
of
asking a little much, and it turns you into an immediate food asshole if you do that.
There's also all these like lovely, intelligent people with big hearts and minds who just aren't that interested in food and. They're okay too, maybe.
Although
I don't really know too many of them.
I read recently the New York Times described Michael Pollan as a liberal foodie intellectual, which to me was like the insulting label trifecta. They just nailed it there. Like, got him from every angle. He's helpless. Liberal foodie intellectual from the bastion of mainstream media, the New York Times. All right, well, it looks like we're about out of time. do you want to read in the last minute we have, Hannah, a couple more of the great list of 15 rules for food assholes?
Sure, a few more rules that every foodie must learn. If you eat meat, eat only the disgusting parts. And if you don't eat meat, let everyone know about it all the time. Be very, very vocal. Be very, very critical, but only of others. And, of course, drink your tea from a canning jar that your grandmother used to make pickles in the 1960s. Don't appear to enjoy it.
I was just in Vermont this weekend, and everything that everybody drank was in a canning jar.
Was in a canning jar. Yeah. That one was added on Friday. Yeah, I was sitting in a coffee shop, and there was a very unhappy-looking young woman came in with her canning jar to get her tea.
So she brought her own canning jar into a place and had them fill it.
Yep.
And then looked angry.
Portland, just in case you were wondering, if you needed to encapsulate Portland into a particular thing, that would be perfect.
Yeah.
And watching people leave a coffee shop with a mason jar full of coffee, that's too hot to hold.
Not made for coffee handling.
So they're not buying the cute ones that have had a handle put on them for...
No.
That would be inauthentic.
They actually have to be used by grandma.
You have to find them.
Right, so we'll see what the backlash will be.
Remember, not everyone shares your food knowledge and refined palate. That's your source of power. So I feel like I should apologize to David McIntyre on our way out here for making fun of him being a food asshole, because he's actually not. He is a very, very smart, educated, knowledgeable food person and an educator on top of it all. Thank you, David, for all that you do to forward our movement, whatever you call it.
Thanks.
All right, well, that's all the time we have today. So thank you very much to my guests, David McIntyre, Michael Florek. You can all Google the Food Asshole's Dilemma to read the whole list. Thanks to the woman who was one of the 17 survivors of the Foodie Massacre of 1978, Hannah Howard. The How to Behave theme is courtesy of John Lundbaum and Big Five Chord. Check them out at big5chord.com. Joe Galarraga engineered today's show. You can always find episodes of How to Behave and lots of other great shows at heritageradionetwork.org. I'm Brian Kaiser, and don't take my advice. Take Michael Florek's advice. If you eat meat, eat only the disgusting parts. This is How to Behave on the Heritage Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.